Hello, and welcome to the third NABBW teleseminar that we are hosting this month. In a moment, I will introduce our guest for this evening, Julie Hall, who is an estate expert who specializes in the dissolution and distribution of personal property. She spends her time helping families deal with their loved ones' lifetime accumulation of stuff, and she's the author of two books on this topic and has just been telling me before this call started that she's about to get a third one off to the publisher, which is very exciting. But the two that are available right now are the first one, The Boomer Burden, Dealing with Your Parents' Lifetime Accumulation of Stuff, and the companion workbook, A Boomer's Guide to Cleaning Out Your Parents' Estate in 30 Days or Less. But first, before we get a chance to talk with Julie, and she has so many wonderful things to be sharing with you, and I can't wait to get started, but let me introduce myself and set the stage so that you know what to expect this evening. For those of you who do not know me, I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com, and we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords Baby Boomer Women. And we're very excited about the fact that later this month, our new website, at the same address, same nabbw.com, but a new version of the site will be going live, and I think it's going to be a lot more easy to use and very much excited over bringing that to everyone's life, because I think it will make the content that we have on our site so much easier for everyone to work with. Now, if you're not a member of the NABBW, you're welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW site, which you can use to join. And this call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have recordings of approximately 70 past teleseminars, which are yours with membership in the NABBW. And because I do three teleseminars at least every month, that list of teleseminars is growing quickly. You won't see these recordings on the site unless you're a member, because we keep them in the members-only area. But they are there, and they're a wonderful value for members. As I said, this is the third of the teleseminars that we've hosted this month. So just a quick word on the earlier two so you can get some idea of the kind of variety that we cover. A week ago, we had a wonderful discussion with Dr. Diana Kirshner on secrets of how boomers can find their own true love. Dr. Diana is the author of a book called Love in 90 Days, and this was a fascinating call. Then last Thursday, we talked with Ann Leach of Life Preservers Grief Support, and she talked to us on holiday grief survival, which is a good topic to pair with tonight's call, I think. Now, as far as the format of the call today, I'd say get yourself comfortable and make sure that in addition to having something to drink, you have paper and pencil to take notes, because the things that Julie's going to share with you this evening are going to be fascinating, and I know that you're going to want to take notes. And also, you don't have to be worried if you miss a few things on the notes, because she has a gift for you that I'll be telling you about in a minute that will help you with keeping control of some of the information that we're getting tonight. So for the next 30 minutes, the phone lines will be muted, and Julie and I will be talking about tonight's topic, how to have that conversation with your parents. After that, I will open the lines for calls from the audience, or questions from the audience. And if you have questions before I open the lines, use the box on your computer screen to type those questions right into the box, and I'll see them as they come in and be able to relay them on to Julie. So let's get started. I'm delighted to introduce our guest for this evening, Julie Hall, who is also known as the Estate Lady. A nationally known expert to children and families, estate attorneys, financial planners, CPAs, real estate and insurance professionals, geriatric and assisted living managers, Julie Hall has made her mark as a consultant and an advisor on the disposition of personal property and also in predicting personal behavior when valuable property is at stake. She writes and speaks on behalf of seniors, educating them on why it is important for them to deal with their personal property before they become infirm or die. Hall also educates their boomer children, guiding them through the entire process on behalf of their parents. Hall is respected within the antiques and collectibles field for determining what has value versus what does not in an estate, alleviating confusion and pressure among those left behind to deal with the personal property distribution. Since publishing her first book, The Boomer Burden, Julie has been resourced across North America as the leading expert in estate dissolution, the personal property side of estate planning, and more. She has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, LA Times, MSN Money, Bloomberg News, Satellite Radio, and many others. Now, she's, in addition to that first book that I mentioned, she's authored a second book, a companion guide, A Boomer's Guide to Cleaning Out Your Parents' Estate in 30 Days or Less. Both books, The Boomer Burden, Dealing with Your Parents' Lifetime Accumulation of Stuff, and The Companion Guide, are available from major booksellers, including Amazon.com. Julie can be contacted through her website, www.theestatelady.com, and through her blog, which is at http://estatelady.wordpress.com. And I also mentioned earlier that she has a gift. That gift for you, people on the call this evening, is a copy of her Top 10 Tips for Dealing with Your Parents' Personal Property, and I'll let you know at the end of the call how to receive this gift. For now, please let me help me welcome Julie Hall.
Well, hello, how are you?
Oh, it's just wonderful to have you on the call, Julie. Before I launch into my questions, let me give you a brief opportunity to say something about what led you to write your books, because I know that that second book, A Boomer's Guide, which is more of a workbook, is just a book that I think every boomer needs to have a copy of.
Well, I agree, and thank you so much. You know, my career has just been fascinating, and through the years, almost two decades now, the one thing that I learned the hard way was how much our beloved seniors are getting taken advantage of. And early on in my career, I saw this firsthand. And through the years, it seemed to get worse until maybe just 2.5-3 years ago, I experienced something very frightening, actually, where I was called to an elderly woman's home who was clearly in her advanced stage of Alzheimer's. And what had happened was she was getting ready to move into a facility, and her neighbors and so-called friends had descended on her and were helping themselves to her personal property. And she had some absolutely beautiful things in her home that they were giving her $1 for, $5 for, $10 for, and these things were worth thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from that moment to this, I tried everything. I called the police. I tried to get people involved. And all I kept getting were dead ends that, you know, this happens all the time. There's nothing you can do. Well, there is always something that can be done. There is a solution, and I just had to find it. And I just decided that it was time to educate not only my senior friends, but their children, of which I'm one of them. And that's ultimately what led me to begin my writing, which has turned out to be quite a passion of mine.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I read that story in your first book, and the part that astounded me was the fact that when you talked to the police, they said that there was nothing that they could do because, if I recall correctly, the elderly woman was accepting those dollars or $5
yes.
bills, and because she was accepting money, that the police could do nothing.
That's correct, because it was considered consensual. And I said, but she doesn't have all her faculties about her. And they said, well, prove it in a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
It would take 6 months to do so.
Right.
And the children were nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
Where they should have been active, they should have been involved. And they weren't, and there went all their heirlooms out the door. And I guess you could say that just really got under my skin. Here I am, a seasoned professional, and I will admit to everyone who's listening that one instance brought me to my knees, and I just cried and cried. And I realized so many people in every city, in every state, across the country, and probably across the world are dealing with this very difficult issue.
Mm-hmm. And that, I would guess, would be one reason why you think it's so important to have what we call that conversation with your elderly parents before they become infirm or before they pass away. But are there other reasons why we should be sure to make time to have that conversation now, or maybe if it's not at the Thanksgiving table in a couple of weeks, but it should be soon?
Well, I would agree so. You know, the one thing that I see happening in families all across the country is that we're dealing with the Depression-era generation, also known as the silent generation. They don't talk about things. They sweep things under the carpet. Very often they don't want to discuss personal issues with their children or their finances with their children. On the other side, you have a boomer child who feels a little lump in their throat every time they think about approaching their depression-era parents, whom they generally have great respect for, and they feel a little funny saying, gee, Mom, you know, we need to go over your finances, or maybe I need to take over your checkbook. And there are so many different issues that need to be taken into consideration. I'm a big believer in having that courageous conversation before your loved ones pass away or become too infirm to do so, or perhaps stricken by memory impairment, which is actually happening in my family as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing that people need to realize is it's okay to ask questions. It's okay for both generations to discuss these things with each other, because if they don't, a lot of guessing is going to take place, which will ultimately lead to finger pointing. Let me give you an example, and it doesn't have anything to do with personal property. If you don't know what your parents' final wishes are, if they have a living will or not, let's say hypothetically they get struck with a life-threatening stroke. They can't speak. They can't even breathe on their own. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know their wishes, and you are left to guess. If you guess incorrectly, do you know the kind of guilt that child is going to have to live with the remainder of their life? Instead of a mom coming to their daughter and saying, honey, I've given this a lot of thought. Here are my final documents. I want you and your brother to have copies of them. If something like this were to happen to me, I choose either to live or choose not to live. But at least the children have been given a map.
Mm-hmm.
They've been given guidance. And that's what I see is happening, is that the older generation is not taking the time to sit down with their children, who they think, oh, you know, I've got a middle-aged daughter, a middle-aged son. They are quite capable of handling decisions after I die. Well, that may or may not be true, but these middle-aged children get confused and overwhelmed, and we are grief-stricken, and we need our parents. Even after they go, we need to know that what we're doing is okay. A lot of my clients will ask me, and people from across the country will email me, Julie, how do I even begin such a conversation? And I will say, well, you always approach it with love. You always come from a place of love. This way you're not coming across as being pushy, or perhaps your parents might think, oh, it's none of their business. For example, Mom, Susie and I have been thinking about you and Dad, and now that you're getting a little older, there are some things that we'd like to talk about with you, because we suddenly realized as your children that we don't know if you have a will, a living will. We don't know where your financial assets are. We don't know any kind of passwords or codes or keys. We don't know where they are. We don't know what they are. And in order for us to fulfill your wishes, we first need to know what they are. And you will be surprised at how they will begin. That opens the gate just enough for you to get your foot in. And certain conversations will take place, and it'll open the gate even more. And that's just, it's just something that some parents will do on their own, and other times the boomer child, most often a female boomer, will be the first to sit down with Mom or Dad, probably the one she has the closest relationship with, and then communicate back to the male sibling. But that's just been, that's been my, you know, what I've noticed through the years with the thousands of clients that I've dealt with, that it, the bulk of the responsibility will most often fall either on the female heir or the daughter-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
That is.
You know, and also, too, I see so many people being afflicted by memory impairment these days.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to sneak up on the heirs, or I should say the children, and then boom, all of a sudden, Mom and Dad no longer recognize us. Mom and Dad can't tell us what banks the money is in, or
right.
Who are their professionals that they've dealt with? Do they have an attorney? Do they have a financial advisor or a CPA? These are all the sorts of things that we need to know
mm-hmm.
before they pass or before they become sick.
Okay. Well, I see that you've talked a little bit about, you know, the need for the parents to provide, you know, an opening for the conversation to start and to perhaps create a list of those passwords and locations. But are there big mistakes that you see the boomer children making?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, very, very much. Every single day I see the same mistakes, even though the scenario may be different. I see the children making the same mistakes. For example, I find when you look at a boomer's life, most of the time they're very busy. They have a lot going on. They're working. They're traveling. They are the sandwich generation. In some cases, they like myself, I have a teenager at home,
mm-hmm.
You know, and we're stuck between the two generations.
Right.
And what I see are hasty decisions being made when it comes to mom and dad's home or estate. They're in a rush to get back home because most of the children have to take a plane
mm-hmm.
to get to mom and dad or have to be in the car for several hours. Some of the boomer children have to take a leave of absence from work.
Mm-hmm.
And in this economy, they're afraid to do so because they're afraid to lose their job. So you have all these factors putting pressure on that boomer to get it done faster, mm-hmm. thus making hasty decisions. For example, throwing things out that have value, not taking the time to hire someone like myself who can just do a walkthrough of the estate and tell you within 1 hour what needs to be done. Or, you know, oh, here's a great idea. Because there's no plan in the place, again, here we go back to guessing. The kids are, I don't know what has value.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what needs to be thrown out or donated or discarded or kept. I don't even know how to sell this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
About a year ago, I walked into it was an eccentric estate, and the executor said to me, oh, Julie, you know, we just need you, I want to buy 2 hours of your time. We think most of this is junk. And I went down in the basement, and I saw all these baskets of stuff. And I said to the executor, what are these baskets? And he said, well, this is all the ugly stuff in the estate. We're going to send it to Goodwill. And I very carefully bent down, and I picked up a vase that happened to be covered in mold, but I knew what it was. And I just looked at him, and I said, this is a $25,000 vase. And look, there are two more just like it in the next basket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you sure you want to send these to donation, or would you
right.
like me to sell them for? So, you know, this is one of the reasons why you bring a professional into it, because not everybody can be expected. And a lot of the kids will say to me, the boomer children will say to me, oh, Julie, it's just junk. Oh, is it really? It's junk in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But very often what the children throw out, and my assistant and I can tell you, we've pulled things out of garbage and dumpsters that are worth tens of thousands of dollars
mm-hmm.
because the children just didn't know what had value and what didn't. You know, not hiring the right resources when they're going through the process. But I think one of the biggest mistakes I see is not getting that plan down pat. What needs to be done when and if? That's going to happen. It's only a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's best to be prepared for finding out history of heirlooms, finding out about the distribution, the final distribution. Mom, who do you want these things to go to? And do it in advance so that when the time comes, it's going to be much easier on the children that are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty much the biggest mistakes that I see being made, is that the hasty decisions, not fully understanding the values of what mom and dad have. Because a lot of times the children will say, oh, this is a very valuable heirloom. And as an appraiser, I will go in and say, well, the market value on this is $200.
Mm-hmm.
And they're shocked because they've heard the stories through the years. But let's talk about that piece on the shelf. Now, that there is worth about $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really surprised because what they thought was junk actually turned out to be a treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And those are in a nutshell, the biggest mistakes I see children making.
Okay, so clearly it's important, and this is something that I don't know of any of, you know, I don't know that I've ever heard of anyone doing this, but I haven't had a lot of my friends sharing with me their experiences with closing their parents' estates, but I still don't think I've ever heard a list before that, that made this so clear that how important it is to hire a personal property appraiser when you're dissolving a loved one's home. It sounds to me like there's a lot going on where something that someone might have collected that people just thought of as this is, you know, mom's most prized possession, you know, it might turn out to be something like from Avon or something that, that doesn't
exactly.
really, that doesn't have a lot of value, and yet there might be something that that they acquired somewhere, you know, in the war or something, grandpa picked something up that, you know, turns out that that might be something that, you know, belongs in a museum.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to have it evaluated, because mm-hmm. You can't possibly know. A professional is going to know, but the average person who does not have this experience or skill set, you're not expected to know.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that it's important to have a plan then for your possessions and your heirlooms. Should we discuss that a little bit further?
Well, I think so. One of my biggest passions in my work, and if there's any impact I can make with my lifetime and with my experience and my skills and my compassion, the one thing I would like to be able to achieve is to help people fight less, to minimize the fighting during the process. Now, everybody within earshot of my voice right now is probably nodding their head because they either know personally of a story or they've heard of a story within a family where horrible fights broke out. Maybe it was something simple. Most of the time it is. It's something silly and often foolish. Or there are two people that just really feel that they're entitled to something. So, you know, it's important to have a plan in place, number one. I try to teach my seniors that I just adore, you know, I see your children after you pass away. And it's not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't just not like each other for the week of your funeral. They dislike each other for the remainder of their lives.
Oh, exactly. I mean, when my mother and her sister had to dissolve their parents' estate, which my grandparents didn't die at the same time, but my grandfather died first and then my grandmother second. But when it came time to closing my grandmother's estate, my mother and her sister ended up not speaking to each other until my mother realized last year that her sister was dying. And then at that mm-hmm. point, she was going, oh, my God, you know, I haven't talked to my sister for all these years. And you know, thinking of all the probably 25 years past that they didn't speak to each other.
Right, right. And your story is very common out there. And so what I try to do in my books and with my writings is to teach people certain tools that you can use to minimize fighting. And there are, you know, one of the biggest tools for that is to make a plan for your possessions before your demise.
Mm-hmm.
Or ask your children, you know, honey, is there anything in the house you would like to have? Or send out a letter to all of the blood children and say, I want all of you to send me a list of things that you would like to have. And then, you know, while mom and dad are still capable, or if it's just mom that's alive, you know, have her make decisions what piece she would like to give to what child. And as far as I'm concerned, what mom says goes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if mom is gifting it to you, or, you know, my mom's done it recently to me, honey, you know, is there anything that you would like? Well, mom, I've always liked those candelabras. I would love to have them. They look so pretty on the wall. And she said, very well, consider them yours. And I said, no, 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 mom, you better put it in writing. And to, you know, put that on a list and send it out to all of your children so that everybody is on the same page at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It works so beautifully for my elderly clients who really want to exit gracefully.
Mm-hmm.
And the children truly love them for it. Because, like, Mom, thank you so much for making things easier on us. And instead of Mom just leaving a mess, I was on the phone just today with someone who was crying and crying and crying. She was so distraught because Mom and Dad didn't deal with their mess prior to their exit. And now all of the children have had to take a leave of absence and travel from coast to coast to get to this estate, and they're completely overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And there's resentment and anger in there too. So by minimizing potential fighting, you're really minimizing just pressure and stress all the way around. And that's what I recommend.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any advice on choosing an executor? Because I've heard stories of situations where one of the children is selected as the executor and then the other children end up hating that executor child because they feel that things weren't handled fairly.
Oh, this happens every day, everywhere, certainly. You know, when choosing an executor, one needs to exercise extreme caution. I will tell you that the Depression-era generation typically will select the oldest male child because that's their mindset. Oh, he must, you know, he knows how to do figures and he's good at that, so we're going to get the oldest son to do it, when it is generally the female child who is the mover and the shaker and the non-procrastinator,
mm-hmm.
who will get things done. I think even in families that get along well, I will tell you one thing that I don't agree with, and that's having co-executors that are siblings, because I guarantee you one of them is not going to agree with the other on multiple issues, and it's going to drag the whole thing out. No, we're not going to sell Mom's house. Yes, we need to sell Mom's house, you know, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people, too, who will hire an outside, could be a trusted family member, could be a professional that they're working with. It has to be somebody who's completely objective and willing to put their foot down and ensure that their wishes will be honored. And it is they have a fiduciary responsibility to fulfill those wishes and to protect those assets. And it's a thankless job.
Mm-hmm.
Picture a target, and the executor is the target.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guarantee you most of the heirs are going to find fault. You know, oh, he's taking money, he's writing himself checks, whatever
mm-hmm.
it may be. Sometimes it's better to hire an objective third party to execute the will, et cetera.
Well, I was wondering about that because, you know, some people might say, well, I'd rather keep it in the family, but I've just heard of situations where a family member is chosen as executor and then there has been situations of theft that, you know, I don't know if they're true or not, but I had people totally believing, telling me, you know, my friend's family, you know, this terrible thing is happening. There's nothing left because the executor took it all. You know, I have no idea because I'm not involved, but it sounds like a terrible situation.
Well, things like that do happen. And whoever your executor is going to have to be someone that you trust explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's also a wonderful question to ask your estate planning attorney.
All right. Now, you mentioned gifting. I think that we should talk more about gifting, especially because I believe that you've said that it's better to gift possessions now. As you mentioned, your mother was telling you about the candelabra, but you said you better write it down. So let's talk a little bit about gifting.
Well, I think gifting is a really beautiful option. You know, whether somebody, you know, there's plenty of people who don't want to give over their things now, but they do want to make a plan for them. So I certainly recommend documenting who gets what or creating, if you will, a wish list with values attached. I'm a big believer in equitable distribution. We can talk about that a little later. But if they don't want to gift right now, at least put it in writing and make sure there are multiple copies out there so they can't be changed or get lost.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody always has a master copy. Now, on the flip side, I've also seen many of my clients who range anywhere from 50 to 100 plus who have decided to gift now and say, you know, Betty, you've always been my best friend. I'd really like for you to have my sapphire ring. Or to children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews. I'll tell you a quick story. I had a family that hired me. There were six siblings and one in-law, one daughter-in-law who decided to show up. And I normally don't recommend that. But apparently they all got along very well. Well, Mom died. Mom had given each of the children certain jewelry pieces. And she gave the daughter-in-law a ring with a purple stone in it. And everybody thought it was just an inexpensive amethyst. Well, all the kids put the jewelry on the table for me to look at and evaluate. And I picked up that one ring with the purple stone in it. And I said, whose is this? And she said, oh, that's mine. I'm the daughter-in-law. And Mom gave that to me before she died. And she said, this is just an inexpensive little amethyst. And I looked at her and I said, this is not an amethyst. I said, we need to have it checked, but I think it's a rare Russian alexandrite. And if it is a rare Russian alexandrite, it's extremely valuable. And they were like, well, how much money do you think it's worth? I said, well, it's probably worth about $90,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be a Russian alexandrite. So the children called me back and said, now there's all kinds of fighting. We don't know what to do. Well, I just made the suggestion, said, why don't you sell the ring and take all of your family members on a cruise?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what she did. That family, it worked out well. Mom just thought it was just, Mom didn't know it was worth that much,
mm-hmm.
you know. But gifting from a lot of my clients is a way of minimizing. In that aspect, it all worked out fine. But most of the time, people will have their things evaluated by a professional like myself. And let's say they have two children, Bobby and Mary, and they find out what things are worth. They ask them a wish list. They write down and keep a tally, a running tally of what these things are worth. It sounds kind of businesslike, but you know what? It works. It works with the children because they fight less. We can't have one heir who gets the lion's share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not fair if Barbara takes $35,000 worth of stuff and Bobby gets $2,500 worth of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to even it out somehow. I think gifting is very beautiful because you get to see the joy on the recipient's face.
Mm-hmm.
You're not dead yet.
Right.
You know, when you're dead, you don't get to see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mother is not well, and she's given me a couple of things. One was a religious statue that was very dear to her whole life. It's not that it was worth a lot of money, but it was very special to my mother. And one day she handed it to me all wrapped up. I said, Mom, I said, this is your favorite, you know, saint. And she
mm-hmm.
said to me, well, I want you to have him. Now he will watch over you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized how important that was for my mom to give to me. And, you know, of course, it's in a place of honor in my house, but I could see it on her face, and she could see it on mine, how much it meant. And, you know, it's one less thing that we're going to have to worry about. If it was something valuable, I would have told my brother about it. Because it's not fair, again, if one person gets a $90,000 ring and the next person gets a $1,000
mm-hmm.
ring. But gifting is a very special option. I think it's extremely personal. The other ways people do it is, you know, at their will hearing, and, you know, well, Mom wants you to have this, and Mom wants you to have this, and they pretty much go around in a circle, and that's great, but there's something special about doing it while the person is still living. I think that's a very special memory that the recipient of the gift will always hold dear, don't you?
Oh, I would think so, yes.
Yes, I think so, too, and that's why I recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think that cleaning out an estate, I admire that you've become such an expert at this, because to me that this is just such an overwhelming task, especially I think it is for so many children, because as you said, so many of us are living at some distance from our parents. I know
mm-hmm.
my father, I'm in a situation where I live in Illinois, my sister lives in Wisconsin, my brother lives in Texas, and well, my father is in another part of Wisconsin, another city in Wisconsin, not the same as my sister. And so my father was saying, you know, if I get sick, there's none of you that are going to be able to come and bring me any chicken soup because you're all working and you're all too far away from me. So that situation of the distance, I think, adds, as well as the emotion that's involved, adds to the overwhelm with cleaning out in the States. So do you have any suggestions for ways to make it easier, or is it just always going to have to be overwhelming?
Oh, no. I think there are certain ways to make it easier. If you are a long-distance child, the one thing that you need to familiarize yourself with is local resources where your parent lives.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. My parents are in Florida. I have to familiarize myself with, home care, with the doctors, with their CPA, with their financial planner, with their attorney, and other resources. I mean, I just got a phone call from Mom the other day sending me, she said, honey, I'm sending you all the funeral information. We just bought everything and it's paid for. And I was like, ooh, that, thanks, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I have to know those resources in the event something happens to them or when something happens to them. When it comes to the home, it is overwhelming. Believe me when I tell you, there is a method to the madness. And I'll tell you part of my secret, and the rest of it, the guidebook that I have, Cleaning Out Your Parents' Estate in 30 Days or Less, really makes tremendous sense. It's just a no-nonsense checklist of what you need to do and when. But here's the secret. You start at the top, and you work your way down. If there's an attic, clean out the attic. Then next you go to, you know, closets and cupboards and cabinets because they can often be bottomless, you know, with the coolest containers and pie tins and mayonnaise jars and so on and so on. And that's what you're going to find in these kitchen cupboards. And there's just, you know, you need to familiarize yourself with a donation crew, with the waste pickup, the garbage pickup. You need to familiarize yourself, you know, you need to assemble a team that will work cooperatively with you, whether that team are family members or whether you hire some local high school or college kids that may need money over the summer. If it's children and the family is working together, they have to work cooperatively. Here's the analogy. Imagine a team of horses that are all attached to one another, pulling a covered wagon. Now, they have a common destination to cleaning out the house or settling the estate, but everybody's got their own idea of what to do and when and how to do it, and these horses start going in different directions. That's not going to be safe. It's actually going to be disastrous, and there would certainly be injuries and other things that happen. In order to get this done, everybody has to be cooperative. And actually, there probably should be a team leader that assigns, you know, certain rooms to certain people, and this person is going to be in charge of bringing the trash out, and this person is going to be going to four different piles that I myself, as an expert, put together. You're going to have your discard pile. You're going to have your donation pile. You're going to have keep and sell. And I always assign a different room for these piles so that it's very clear that these things are going to be packed up and go to donation, and these things need to be put in garbage bags and taken to the curb or to the dumpster, whatever it may be. And if it's done methodically and logically, it can get done in a relatively quick period of time.
Excellent. Now, I know how important it is to have a will, but I have to confess that my will is out of date. So my children are in their 30s, and at the moment my will tells about who's going to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who's going to become their guardians, et cetera. So obviously I need to correct my will. But what happens if in a situation where you have a parent who dies without a will? Can the children still take what they want, or what goes on in that situation?
Well, first of all, if your parents are still living and they don't have a will, priority number one is to make them get a will or trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because keep in mind that the laws are state specific. So the laws in North Carolina are going to be different from Wisconsin, are going to be different from Florida, New York, and so forth. If someone dies without a will, it's called intestate.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the older people assume that their children will work things out amongst themselves, and even if there are disagreements along the way, they think everything's going to be fine. Unfortunately, when a person dies without this will, the state has a legal responsibility to handle the affairs of the loved one who has died. When there is no valid will, a probate court will appoint an administrator to handle the loved one's affairs, and their property will be distributed according to a formula that's already in place by that state's laws. And there's no way around these laws. They are concrete. No matter what proof you may have, you know, mom always said I could have the house. Where is it in writing?
Mm-hmm.
It has to be in writing. And, you know, debt has to be taken care of before the dissolution and distribution of the estate. There are so many issues that are involved. And it ends up being costly, not only financially, but emotionally taxing on those left behind. So in my opinion, dying without a will is a really big no-no, because they're easy to get, they're not that terribly expensive, and it is worth hiring a professional estate planning attorney to help you through that process to make sure that all of your wishes will be fulfilled and all of your questions will be answered. It's so important to do this. And really, there's no excuse for not doing it in this day and time. However, if all of us on this phone call right now were sitting in a circle, the person to my left and the person to my right don't have a will. And that's a scary statistic.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, greater than 55% of us don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that means a lot of children are going to be fighting. You know, some of those children may be teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
That don't know, they're not old enough to make decisions. They may not yet be of sound mind
mm-hmm.
to make decisions. And it really opens up a Pandora's box of you don't know what you're going to get, but it's going to cost in time, it's going to cost in dollars, and it's going to cost in frustration. So as far as taking what you want, the answer is no, because the state is going to come in and make decisions for you. Now, eventually, those things will be trickled down, but probably not the way you want it to.
All right. Now, you've suggested a list of trusted resources. Who would you advise should be on that list?
Oh, well, trusted resources, it's a fairly long list. An attorney, an estate liquidator, personal property appraiser, a CPA and financial advisor, a moving company, even a hauling, somebody who offers hauling or debris removal services is important. Have a list of some of mom and dad's city or county services, such as their refuse, their waste pickup, a minister, rabbi, counselor, someone that you can go to if you need to talk. Geriatric care managers. You know, another thing, while I'm thinking about it, that I think is very important to talk about during that conversation is HIPAA. Having a HIPAA waiver signed while mom and dad are still alive, because this will enable the children in advance to be able to have access to the medical status and needs. Because a lot of people don't know, if your name is not on mom and dad's HIPAA form, that doctor cannot divulge any information to you, any medical information, and you'll be kept in the dark. You have to jump through a lot of hoops. So while I'm thinking about it, that's something that's very important to talk about. You can research it online. It's called a HIPAA waiver. Getting back to the list of trusted resources, nobody wants to think about this, but you'll need a funeral director, too, and you know, final arrangements of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the basic resources that you would need. Now, if mom and dad are still alive, the resources are going to change a little bit. You're going to need your home health care, et cetera. But the more resources you can think about now, keep a book, a journal, just a spiral notebook, and just start jotting these ideas down as you get them and start doing research about these people in their area.
Mm-hmm. So this would be something if your parents are still alive that you would probably sit down with them and ask, who is your
attorney?
And
yes.
who would you like to be your appraiser? Do you have a preferred moving company? That sort of...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely. Very, very important. I've got a file about 1.5 inches thick that my parents provided for me of all names, numbers, assets, account numbers, passcodes, where keys are, you name it, I've got it. And when the time comes, all my brother and I have to do is open up that file and all the information is there where we need it.
How long do you think it takes the average person to create a file of that depth, of that completeness?
Probably about 6 months.
Okay.
Unless they don't have 6 months. If somebody's been given a terminal diagnosis, they're going to have to really speed it up and get as much information as they can, and they will probably have to take time off of work and dictate as much information as possible while the loved one is still able to.
Okay. Well, I have more questions, but I'm looking at the clock here, and I want to let some of our listeners have a chance to ask questions of you as well, and I have some questions that have come in through the computer, so let me put the call back into interactive mode so all guests are able to speak, and I'm going to suggest that anybody here who's on the call and would like to tell us what your question is, please go ahead, and we'll just kind of do a first-come, first-serve kind of a thing. Anybody out there want to be first?
Don't be shy.
All right. Well, I'll start with a question from that came in online. I've got a couple of good ones from there. The first one is from Diane in Newport Beach, and she says, my company, The Deal Fairy, helps seniors get their homes ready to sell when they move to retirement or senior living communities or facilities. We clean and repair the home and often go through the process of what to do with things that they aren't keeping. I've thought of hooking up with people who do estate sales, but I am not sure if we need them. What is your recommendation?
My recommendation would be this. As an entrepreneur myself, the more resources you have, the better you're going to look for your client. I would say absolutely enlist the assistance of an estate sale professional and a personal property appraiser. And, you know, there's even a way to build your business on referring to those people, too. And she's certainly welcome to email me if she would like some ideas on that. But I think it's very important because if you're dealing with personal property, your obligation and responsibility is to, you know, for example, somebody pulls a dusty old painting out of a closet. Well, how do you know if it's a $50 painting or a $50,000 painting?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of liability with that. So I would certainly build your trusted list of resources. It's only going to make you look more professional.
Excellent. All right. Anybody else here who's on the call who would like to ask a question? Just speak up. We're happy to ask Julie anything that you have on your mind. I hear people.
Sometimes it's too personal.
All right. Well, I've got a question from Veronica in Mission Viejo. She says, do you have any advice on dealing with hoarding and the elderly? Adam, this story is just amazing. She says, the condition of my mother's home is frightening and even dangerous. The possibility of tripping and falling is very real, yet she is loath to let go of anything. I recently spent 12 hours working in her kitchen, and unless you had seen it first, you wouldn't know anyone had been cleaning.
Yeah. I have a lot of experience with hoarding, and have many times had to put myself in a bubble suit to do so. So I understand. You know, when you're dealing with a hoarder, there's just so many emotional issues, and you know, this is all I can say. She let you in. you spent that time starting to clean out. If she's going to continue to stay in the home, obviously you've explained to her it's a tripping hazard, it's a fire hazard. It's also a biohazard if there are, well, you know, sometimes it attracts bugs and rodents and things of that nature, and it has to be cleaned out. I really would enlist the help of people who are sensitive to such things. You've got to thin it out. And really, the first thing that I would do is to get out the food that is no longer good and concentrate on paper. They have a fetish for paper, whether it's newspapers, catalogs, magazines, and, I mean, you'll find them in there dated back to the 1960s and 70s. Get the paper out of the house. If it can't be saved, throw it out. If it can be saved, recycle it. But begin with that and just explain, Mom, you know, I love you, but if you're going to continue to live here, we've got to do this. There's really no easy way around it. There's no easy answer for this.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got to continue working very hard. And I believe you. I've worked in those kitchens for 12 hours and barely made a dent.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep doing what you're doing and try to make the environment as safe as possible with them. But understand that the hoarding will continue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even after it's cleaned, it'll start all over again, unless they're moved.
Okay.
So that's my advice, is keep doing it.
Well, do you have any advice for her on to know what to keep, what to sell? And you mentioned keep, sell, donate, and throw away. How do you decide which goes into each bin?
Well, you know, basic clothes, you know, you have good usable clothing. These are donatable. Linens, towels, kitchenware, pots and pans. These are all very good for donation. Shoes, things of that nature. As far as things that you want to keep, I always tell heirs, you know, keep what really speaks to you, because we're not 19 years old anymore. Our houses are full because we've been married 20, 30, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and we don't want to leave a mess for our children.
Mm-hmm.
That's in my book, The Boomer Burden. So I'm just a really big believer in just being prudent with what you keep. Now, as far as furniture, good usable furniture. I'm not referring to antiques. I'm referring to upholstered furniture, lazy boy chairs, things of this nature. In some cases, it's not even worth selling because upholstered furniture, the furniture market is very low right now. Even the antique market is very low right now. So people are disappointed in what things are selling for. When it comes to a hoarder, though, it is not unusual to find a diamond ring in a crumpled up Kleenex in a corner somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows that she can't leave any stone unturned. And that's what makes this so heartbreaking and so difficult, is because you'd like to be able to throw everything out, but you can't. You have to sort through everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, as far as keeping, you know, have what you think is valuable evaluated by a professional. And if it's a good professional, they will advise you, like I advise my clients, you know, if I were you, I'd hold on to this piece because you don't see many of these anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I were you, you know, it's beautiful and it's grand, but I see them in every estate and you can expect to get about $400 for it. So they're like, oh, really? I thought it was more rare than that. No, I think it's okay to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So really, there's a lot in an estate, believe it or not, that's going to be donated and thrown out. Most people don't know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you said that the antique market isn't very good right now. So if you had a situation where a person has a lot of antiques, and I'm thinking mm-hmm. of my step-grandfather who has a whole bunch of antiques from Japan that he and his wife collected when he was there after in the occupation after World War II. So in his case, it might not be the same because they're Japanese. But would it ever make sense to hold the antiques and rent a storage bin and keep them until the market gets better? Or don't you think that that's a good thing to do?
Well, you know, I wish I had that crystal ball. All I can offer you is my opinion. I think it's going to be many years before the market returns.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as Oriental items, I will tell you that they are the rage. It is the one thing that is selling very well on the market right now, particularly antique Chinese. But Japanese items are very much in demand as well. To me, storage is a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good temporary solution, but not long term. And if you find the right auction house for those items, they'll sell very well. Because when you think about the money that you're putting into storage over the
course of years. Well, that was the thing. There's a cost to that.
And you have to take the ratio of cost to what you're going to get for it into consideration. If you're paying $10,000 in storage and you only have $2,500 worth of stuff, that's not a good decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I always encourage my clients, let's look at this logically, because I don't think this is going to be a very good decision unless it's something that you're willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to find a solution for my clients and say, you know, if I were you, let's look at this auction company, send them some pictures, see what they have to say about them. And if they want the pieces, I would say sell it. I just have a feeling that the market is going to be depressed for a long time. The economy, sure, the economy has something to do with it, but we also have to take into consideration supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
As we lose our elders, the supply into the marketplace is getting greater and greater, yet the demand is not, because our younger generation doesn't want these older things.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want dark wood. We're seeing a trend toward lighter wood and streamlined, more European-shaped furniture. The younger generations want to go to IKEA and Pottery Barn. They're not really interested in grandmother's couch that's been reupholstered 6 times,
mm-hmm.
nor are they interested in grandmother's china or silver, because silver, you know, is labor-intensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger generations just aren't interested in that. They would rather eat off of stainless.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to take many things into consideration: obsolescence, style, supply and demand, economy, collectability. There's so many different issues that we look at. But right now, the darker old furniture just doesn't seem to be commanding that much.
Okay. Good answer there. And I certainly did not know that about the dark furniture. Anybody else who's listening in who has a question? I don't want to dominate the call here after I opened it so you can all answer, but I do have other questions. If no one's going to speak up, I've got things to ask. Okay, well, I will jump in again here, Julie, because I hate dead air. So.
Okay, sure.
How do you have a question here that I want to make sure to ask. How does a person locate a reputable estate appraiser or liquidator in your parents' community?
Oh, that's a really good question. There are certain trusted resources I would go to. First of all, if you're looking for a personal property appraiser, no matter where you're located, I'm going to give you two places that you can Google. The first one is the American Society of Appraisers, ASA, the American Society of Appraisers. And the second is the International Society of Appraisers, or ISA. If you're looking for an estate liquidator, be careful. Be very careful. Whoever you hire, make sure you ask them how long they've been in business. Check the Better Business Bureau to see if they have any unresolved complaints against them. If anybody offers to buy the estate, walk away. That's a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the American Society of Estate Liquidators. I own this organization for estate liquidators. We also train estate liquidators and certify them to make sure that they're going to do it correctly when they go out. There's a great business to be in, very much in demand. But if you need someone in, you know, Sacramento, you need somebody in New York City, if I have a liquidator in that area, I will certainly send you that referral. And I'm the only one like it in the country.
Wow. So this is really good information, and wouldn't have gotten it if we didn't have you on the call. So, to know. Anybody else? Well, I'm going to ask one more question here, and then I'm going to wrap things up because there's a number of things I want to cover before we end the call. And that is, you alluded to this earlier, Julie, but I'd like to discuss it a little bit in more depth. You talked about a situation where your parents won't tell a person their wishes. You know, maybe they're still alive, but they're not willing to share what their wishes are.
Mm-hmm.
How can you honor your parents when they won't say what their wishes are?
Well, this is a tough one for anybody. You know, you have to try and kind of dig into that. If the parents are still alive, you're going to have to disarm that and try and dig into it and find out what the cause of that or the root of it is. I would certainly recommend that you stay as close as possible to not only your loved one, but that your siblings and you stay very, very close. Do your best to show that you're right there. And again, continue to ask. And it's okay to say, Mom, please, please don't leave us empty-handed with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what's going to happen if we don't have this information. And we're just asking you so that we'll know exactly what to do. And, you know, sometimes that works. Sometimes you have to give them a little nudge, just a little bit, and just say, we really need to know. Always approach with reason. You know, if you're going to say, Mom, we need this because, give them a logical reason why you're asking for this, and encourage them again to take a participatory place in this and just say, you know, we want you involved in it, and let's talk about this now, about how we can make it fair and equitable, and talk about who you would like to have which item. You know, and 8 times out of 10, they will soften to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have clients that say, you're going to have to carry me out of this house feet first, and I'm not discussing anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to figure it out for yourself. And that is unfortunate and regretful, because there's so much they could do to make life easier on those that are going to be left behind. So that would be my advice in that situation. Just keep trying, keep plugging along, and don't give up.
Okay. Excellent. Anyone else of our callers? One last chance here to ask your question. Okay. Well, I want to say again, as we close, we've been talking with Julie Hall, the estate lady, and her books are The Boomer Burden, Dealing with Your Parents' Lifetime Accumulation of Stuff, and The Companion Guide that she's most recently written is A Boomer's Guide to Cleaning Out Your Parents' Estate in 30 Days or Less. Both are available from all major booksellers, including Amazon.com. And also, Julie has a website located at www.theestatelady.com, and through her blog, which is http://estatelady.wordpress.com. And I mentioned earlier at the top of the call that she has a gift to the listeners, a free copy of her top 10 tips for dealing with your parents' personal property. And she will be posting that on her site at the conclusion of this call. So in order to get your copy of the top 10 list, go to that website, theestatelady.com. Julie, it's been great talking to you this evening. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for the... Oh, good, good. Well, it was a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I just think it's a hugely important topic, and I appreciate that you could share this information with everyone listening this evening. So thank you for joining us, and thank you to our listeners for being here with us. And everyone, enjoy the holidays. Good night.
Good night.